Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Well, what a game that was last night. My goodness, there was some fireworks going on between the Mariners and the Astros in the ninth inning, and I was here for all of it. All of it. I am Jake Heaps, filling in for Stacy Ross as your lead today. We got Curtis Rogers joining me today, and then we got Brady behind the glass. So this is going to be a fun show. Stacy, unfortunately, is under the weather, so we're sending our thoughts with her, and hopefully she'll make a quick recovery here.
Yeah, she wasn't making a Michael Jordan flu game performance today.
No. And quite frankly, this is something that even if she wanted to, she couldn't do this, okay? We needed her to get some rest. Take a break, because Stacy would be nonstop talking about the fight that ended up happening, or the non-fight, however you want to talk about it. But the emotions...
I feel terrible for her, because what she wants in every sporting event that she watches is a competitive game with lots of drama, and a close second is a fight.
Yes.
Is a Donnybrook, a brouhaha, if you will. Last night, we came so close to seeing that between the Mariners and Astros. The benches cleared. Scott Servais was hopping mad, red in the face.
Oh, man, he was leading the charge.
Yeah, he was the first one out of the dugout. And we came so close, but there is tension now between this Mariners and Astros team that did not exist to this degree prior to last night. And now that both of these teams have a hate in their heart for each other, I really want to see what happens tonight and on Wednesday between these two teams, because there is some legit bad blood now between both the Mariners and Astros.
There's no question. And you know the interesting part about this, and we're going to get into it, but you knew that the Mariners were kind of the thorn in the Astros side, that it was like, you know, little brother, so to speak, and little brother got the best of the Astros from time to time last year, and you see the Mariners start to take the turn, winning 91 games and all of that. But now you see that the Houston Astros legitimately don't like the Mariners, and the Mariners obviously don't like the Astros. That is very clear. And as you mentioned, this takes it to another level. This rivalry, the emotions, the bad blood. I mean, it is clear as day for everyone to see. And the emotional reactions that we saw were very real. This wasn't manufactured. This was real heat in the moment. And honestly, we are spending our time talking about the fireworks that happened in the ninth. There was a series of events that happened before this, but I want to focus on the ninth inning, because to me, this shows kind of an opportunity that is here for the Mariners and the excitement that is there currently with this win that they had last night, a big win over the Houston Astros. But also, it really goes to show, in my opinion, that the Houston Astros have a garbage organization, that they are a garbage organization, okay? And where it started is here in the ninth inning. You have a base runner on, and Ty France is up at the plate in the ninth inning, and you have Neris, who throws at Ty France. It's not just an elbow hit, but throws behind him and hits him in the back. Let's listen to that. Cut number five.
Neris ready, kicks, delivers. Inside, and that threw behind him. It didn't hit him. Or did it? Did it graze him? It did. He's taken off the left guard on his arm. That fastball was behind Ty France. Holy smokes. And Scott Servais not too happy. And now Scott Servais barking over to the first base dugout, and the benches are clearing around home plate. Ty France is just standing there. The Astros are there. The Mariners are there. There's a big pile down around home plate.
So I heard this driving. I was not watching. So I'm listening to Rick Riz, and I'm hearing this whole thing go on. I'm like, I'm speeding home because I want to see what's going on, right? I want to see this fight that happens. And it wasn't really a fight. It was just guys coming together and a little bit of pushing and definitely words exchanged. There's no question about that.
It was a stern talking to from both sides is what I would describe it as. But when the bench is clear, that gets the attention of even the casual observers. My wife, Brenna, who is not the biggest baseball fan, but will watch the games with me because obviously I have to watch them for work. She was on her phone, and I go, oh my God, bench is clear. And she's, what? like that's what a lot of casual sports fans look for in their sports entertainment, is a moment like last night where there are not cooler heads prevailing, where people are, you know, going back and forth like the Mariners and Astros were last night.
Yeah.
And to see Scott Servais lead the charge, I mean, this isn't the first time he's done that. I think people don't remember his first year with the Mariners against the Texas Rangers, that series down in Arlington, him and Rangers manager, I think Jeff Bannister who it was, they got into it similar to what the Mariners and Astros did last night.
Yeah.
And it's weird how those are the two most memorable ones during Servais' tenure, and he's the first one out of the dugout.
Well, because you love to see the Skip take charge of this thing.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And really where it started is, okay, Neris throws at Ty France. I think it's pretty clear and obvious what's going on. It's a weird point in the game to, you know, miss by that much. Like, it seemed very intentional. Ty France felt it was intentional. I don't care what he said afterwards. Ty France tried to downplay it. You felt it was intentional. You stood at home plate talking to the umpire, and, you know, you were spending your time, you know, making your case, right? And the Astros dugout, the coaching staff, I don't know who it was, started yelling at Ty France and Scott Servais basically to pipe down and just take it. And I think that's what triggered Scott Servais to basically go off, and that's what started this bench clearing
brawl.
Well,
and to that point, Brandon Gustafson, who writes for SeattleSports.com, mentioned in the sports pit this morning, what are the Astros doing punching down at the Mariners, a team that is significantly behind them in the AL West race?
They did it the day before, Curtis, with the Royals.
Another team that has accomplished significantly less than what the Astros have. Actually, I take that back. The Astros and Royals have won the same amount of World Series over the last decade, but the Royals are clearly nowhere close to what the Astros are right now in terms of major league talent, in terms of minor league talent. What are you doing punching down at these teams that are not in your same ballpark, so to speak?
Yeah.
It just shows a thin skin that this Astros team has, when it's like, you guys have accomplished so much. You've won 3 American League championships. You've won a World Series. You've got former MVPs on your roster. You probably got future MVPs on your roster.
Yeah.
Why do you have to feel like you got to, you know, prove a point here?
Because they're the bullies on the block that when they don't get their way, they get their feelings hurt. That's what they look like to me. And you mentioned, you know, thin skin. Well, you know what's so unbelievably good is you see that happen. You see tempers flare, emotions are hot. You know, this is a really, really important game in the series. Obviously, first game, it dictates a lot. And then you go and see the young 21-year-old phenom in Julio Rodriguez come up in the very next at bat and do this in cut number 6.
And he delivers. Swing and a fly ball into right field. Going back, Tucker, to the one he tracked near the wall. Goodbye, baseball! Julio Rodriguez with an opposite field 2-run home run here in the top of the 9th inning.
So by this time, I have made it home, Curtis. I am watching it, and Julio hits this jack, and I am freaking out. We're trying to get River to bed. You know what? That's got to take a second. We got to put that on pause.
Sorry, Riv.
Like, let's go. And, I mean, that was unbelievable to be able to have him step up in that moment. We know how talented he is. We know and seen that this kid has such a bright future. But to come up in that moment, in that critical of a moment with the emotions running hot, and for him to come up clutch and put the dagger into the bully on the block in the Houston Astros, man, that was fun to watch.
Now, that was an emotional point in this game. Really, the entire 9th inning was just the most fun watch of a Mariners game in quite some time. Maybe dating back to last year against the Astros when Dylan Moore hit that grand slam to cap the 7-0 comeback off. But I want to know, Jake, did the fireworks of the 9th inning last night spark anything in the Mariners going forward? Because there is something that this Mariners team just has been desperately needing over the last couple months,
yeah,
really since the end of April, where they have not been able to string a ton of wins together. We're currently in the midst of their best stretch of baseball since when they were 11-6. They've won 7 of their last 10 games. Unfortunately, they have not won more than, I think, 2 games consecutively in this stretch. But is there anything that you saw last night in that ninth inning that might spark this team and sort of use it as a galvanizing moment? Because, look, it's fun what happened last night in a vacuum.
Yeah.
But could there be something to come from this?
Well, that's what matters, right? That's ultimately what matters more, is not just the spat that happened last night and emotions running hot. That eventually wears off. But can it be that galvanizing moment, as you mentioned? I believe yes. So they're winning 7 of 10 right now. They're feeling good about the direction that they're heading in. And then it's not just that, but it's Julio Rodriguez coming up big in that moment. And it's also, you know, you look at, you know, moments prior to that. How about Sergio Romo giving us a heart attack, putting base runners on, and, you know, you're thinking, oh no, this is going to be the moment where the bullpen blows it. You know, we've seen this happen multiple times this season, and Sergio Romo comes up big, right? These are the little things that you want to see happen for the Mariners, where they gain confidence and they gain momentum and they really start to come together as a clubhouse, and they feel like, hey, we can do this. Much like last year, the Shedlong Grand Slam against Tampa Bay was that moment that really sparked the Mariners, and they took off around this time of the year. I really truly do feel like that moment is there for them. Now they've got to go prove it to me with a series win. They've got to go, you know, capture this series win against Houston. And I have never at any point wanted it more than Curtis to cap off truly the exact, you know, picture of what happened. You throw up France, that's one thing. Julio Rodriguez then silences the crowd and puts the dagger into the game with the home run. Then the very next pitch with Neris, he gets tossed after going up top on Suarez and throwing at his head. Here's what it sounded like, cut number 7.
So here is Suarez, the big day yesterday. 0-for-4 tonight, pitch on the way, and it's over his head all the way to the backstop. Bounces back to the catcher, Castro. Throw down to second, and Crawford is in at second base. Holy smokes, that one almost took off the head of Suarez. Neris, I think, is going to be gone, and now the umpires are going to get together after throwing behind France. Now this one is over the head of Suarez, and Neris is gone. They gave the warning after the pitch by Neris behind Ty France, so now Neris has to go.
So now you've got it right there, and this to me is not by accident. This is not by accident whatsoever.
No, not at all. Hector Neris last night purposely threw at Eugenio Suarez because he got owned on the pitch before by Julio Rodriguez. That's exactly what it was. It's like when you're a father of three, when you tell your kids that they're in trouble and they want to stay up, and
yeah,
it's like, no, go to bed. And then they do that one last thing that sets everybody off, and it's like, okay, now you're going to bed. Like, no more playing around. You got to go, Hector Neris. All right, this is not – like, you can say that you accidentally threw at Ty France,
mm-hmm,
but because Julio got you on the pitch prior, you absolutely were throwing at Eugenio Suarez. That's exactly what it was. And Dusty Baker can play dumb all he wants. But you know what, Dusty? When you say, like, oh, I don't know why everybody's coming at the Astros – you signed up for this. You signed up to be the Astros manager, knowing full well what everybody in baseball thought of them. You took over for A.J. Hinch and thought, oh, because I'm a different manager than this guy, people are going to respect us more. No, that's not how it is. Sorry you feel as though your team is being ganged up on, but the Astros cheated baseball. They
yes,
absolutely did it, and they were paid off with a World Series title. You think that sits well with anybody? No, it doesn't. And that's why people continue to go at the Astros the way the Mariners have, the way the Royals did just 2 days ago, the way we've seen it with the Dodgers, a couple other teams too. Like, just because you weren't there for the cheating doesn't mean that people are going to lay off Houston.
Yes.
Sorry, Dusty.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Buckle up, buddy. That's just the way it's going to go. All right. Well, we got to get going. We've got a lot for you. There's plenty more where that came from in regards to Mariners conversation. We've got a lot to dive into. We've got at 12 p.m., we got Brady Henderson. We've got the Dugout from 1 to 2 p.m., the Scott Service Show, Aaron Goldsmith, Shannon Dreyer, all of it coming your way. And we might have a special guest come on the show that I am really, really excited about. So we've got an awesome show. Stay tuned in. But for right now, let's get to Headline Rewrites, brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacy.
All right. First up, we have the Seahawks begin their mandatory three-day mini camp this afternoon. What's the real headline?
Real headline? It's only mandatory if you're not in a contract negotiation. We see it all the time. What was it last year? Jamal Adams had a quote-unquote family emergency right when minicamp started. Isn't it weird how all family emergencies in the NFL happen only during minicamp?
Yeah, it's just very convenient that way, right? I mean, look, if there's a time where you need a family emergency, it would be great if it happened during mandatory minicamp so you don't have to get fined tens of thousands of dollars each day that you're not there. I mean, it's insane how much money you could end up getting fined if you're not there for mandatory minicamp or training camp. And obviously, those things are set in place so that it de-incentivizes players to, you know, not practice and show up and hold out more often. So, look, I think that the Seahawks, they're a first-class organization. They work with their players. They try to, you know, accommodate their players to the best of their abilities. But this is the situation where you got to show up. And the veterans have been able to, you know, stay away from the facility for a while to take care of their own rehab process, to rest up. Now it's time to come in, be here for a week, integrate yourself with the rest of the young guys and the rookies that are here, and to really give that veteran presence and that veteran feel to mini camp, training camp. This is how it's really going to feel when everybody's together. And those moments are really important when it comes to gelling and improving your team and looking forward.
Headline Rewrites.
All right. The Rams have restructured Aaron Donald's contract, giving him a reported $95 million guaranteed over the next three seasons. What's the real headline?
Real headline. The rest of the NFC West countered this move by saying, hey, not fair.
It's true, though.
What do you mean you get to keep Aaron Donald?
Not only do you get to keep Aaron Donald, but you get to pay him a ton of money. And everybody, I know it. I just know it. The conversation is, how does Les Snead keep doing this? GM,
he
Les
can't
Snead
keep getting away with this.
Right. You're spending money that you don't have. Well, clearly they do have it, and clearly the Rams have been doing an excellent job of maneuvering the cap and manipulating the cap to their benefit to be able to keep their Super Bowl team together and to continue to keep finding ways to add to it. It is amazing to watch how they have been doing this. You talk about zig while everybody else is zagging. Well, the Rams have certainly gone about this in a way that no one has ever seen in the NFL. And the question remains, how long is it sustainable? The answer to that question, we'll find out. I mean, we're all waiting for it.
It's like, God, I feel bad for whoever is running the Rams in like 2040 because they're going to have to pay.
Yes.
Their salary cap is going to be just destroyed. They're going to have no draft picks. But man, they're going to have won so many titles on the way to that.
Correct.
Way down the road.
Yeah, and it makes it worth it, right? I mean, we're all waiting for that moment where, you know, all of a sudden couches and things are getting repossessed from the Rams facility to buy back what they've been doing. But the reality is, though, is that I don't know if that day is actually going to come, Curtis. I just think that the Rams have done an excellent job of manipulating the cap in a way that most other teams just don't like to do because it's riskier, right? If the payoff isn't there, it puts you in a longer-term financial bind to be able to get yourself competitive again. And I think the Rams have just said, look, we're going in with this all-in approach, and so far it's been able to work out for them.
I respect their desire to fill out their roster with as many stars and as many household names as possible, because you know who doesn't put butts in seats? Saying like, oh, we saved $20 million against the cap by cutting so-and-so. That's not going to get your fan base excited. You know what is going to get your fan base excited and charged up and energized?
Yeah.
Keeping your superstars around, like Aaron Donald, in L.A., that's what's going to energize a fan base, not saying like, guys, we're saving money against the cap 2, 3, 4 years down the road. Think of our flexibility in 2026.
Well, speak for yourself, Curtis. I mark down every single penny that I spend. I love to see how much I save each month. That is not true. I wish I did. But I am with you on that. It is amazing. And you know why else they have to do that, Curtis?
Why is it?
To keep the attention of their LA fan base who doesn't give a rip about football. Next.
Headline Rewrites.
All right. Phil Mickelson announced he is officially joining the LIV tour and will reportedly earn $200 million in salary. What's the real headline?
Las Vegas bookmakers are also said to be earning around $200 million in this new partnership.
What is that? What is that? That gif of guy rubbing his hands, like, just, oh yeah, here we go.
Here we go. Here yeah. We go. Everybody in Vegas is like, sweet.
Yes.
A new cash flow headed our way.
Boy, this is going to be some big money. Big money.
Look,
all right, Phil.
I get why Phil jumped at that kind of payday. His gambling struggles are obviously well known.
Yes.
But boy, I feel like there are more ethical ways going about.
Sure.
Paying off those kinds of debts.
I mean,
saddling up with the regime that is funding this golf tour.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the best move, Phil.
You don't feel comfortable with that?
Blood money?
Yeah.
Nah, that's I would not feel comfortable. Now, look, I say that as somebody that will probably never get offered $200 million to do anything.
Yeah.
Because that money talks loud.
It does talk loud. I mean, that is, you're taking care of, I mean, that's generational wealth that you're taking care of there. And as you said,
gambling debts,
whatever comes first, you know, who knows. But, you know, the crazy thing about Phil Mickelson is it's not like they're getting Phil Mickelson in his prime.
They're getting 50-year-old Phil.
Yeah, but they're also getting Phil Mickelson prime stardom, in my opinion. Like, Phil is a household name because of his personality, and everybody just likes to tap in or likes to check in on Phil Mickelson. What is Phil Mickelson doing? How is he doing? It's not the same power of Tiger Woods, obviously, but it's still one of those rare names in golf that has that star power that is, I mean, that's why the Saudi Tour wants him. That's why they're willing to pay him $200 million. It's not because of, you know, he's the best golfer in the world. That's not the case.
It was rumored that they offered Tiger Woods more than Phil Mickelson.
Oh,
so Phil's getting $200 million. I have no idea the sum that Tiger Woods would be worth.
The problem is that Tiger Woods would be busted by the first tour, and then it would just be,
yeah, and
it'd
also
be over.
That kind of money to Tiger probably is not going to change his life in the way that it would Phil Mickelson. Like,
yes.
Tiger sees that kind of paycheck a couple times a year, I'm guessing.
He's doing just fine.
Yeah,
Tiger Woods
he's
is doing just
quite
fine.
All right.
It's the Jake and Stacey Show. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. There was one Mariner in particular who should be thankful for last night's fireworks in the ninth inning. Find out who that is next.
Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
There are 162 games.
All right, we promised you that we would tell you who that player is that should be most thankful for last night's ninth inning fireworks. Curtis, can you take a guess as to who that is?
I think it was last night's starting pitcher.
Oh!
I think that might have been who was most thankful that the magnifying glass was not on him this morning, and rather on the fisticuffs or the near fisticuffs that went down in the ninth inning. Robbie Ray, look, he was the big fish of the offseason for the Mariners. And as we've talked about time and time again on this show, it was the right move for the Mariners to make. And if they were given the choice to do it over again, they would be foolish not to. But Robbie Ray's performance last night, again, it just feels like it's more of the same. Laboring through 4 or 5 innings, giving up multiple home runs. He's given up home runs now in 7 consecutive starts.
Yes.
Only struck out 3 Astros last night. Did not have really anywhere close to the kind of stuff that he normally has. I was looking at his numbers. Last night was the first time he had allowed an unearned run this season. So everything that he has given up this season has been entirely his own fault.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at what he has done this year. I mean, his ERA is up near 5. It's 4.97. He did get the win last night,
which is
wild to think about, because if that ninth inning doesn't happen, if the Mariners sneak out of there with a 5-4 win yesterday, or if, God forbid, the Mariners blow last night's game, which didn't happen thanks to their bullpen, which was really good last night.
Yeah.
We're talking about Robbie Ray to start today's show, and it's not in a good light.
No, it's not. And you know, we're going to come in here really negative and everything else. So thank goodness that isn't the tone of today, because the Mariners were able to overcome it. They were able to win and win in a pretty emotional, exciting fashion. But I mean, when you get up to a 4-1 lead, right? Cal Raleigh, he hits a 3-run home run, and you go, all right, wow, this is it. This is awesome. You're giving Robbie Ray some cushion to work with here. You're getting yourself into a comfortable spot. And then Robbie Ray in the second, homer to Tucker, homer to McCormick, and then Altuve, you know, singles, and now you're tied up at 4. Again, you just completely took the wind out of the sails of what your teammates have done for you to put you in the best position. And Curtis, we knew that Robbie Ray was he was susceptible to giving up home runs, but not in this way, not at this rate. This is not okay. And it's amazing to see somebody that has the work ethic that he does, the mentality that he does. I mean, this guy's a grinder, legitimately. He's a grinder, and I really appreciate the attitude and the work ethic that Robbie Ray has. But when you're consistently putting the ball over the middle of the plate and you don't have your best stuff, you don't have your best fastball, and your slider isn't working for you the way that that you would want it to, I mean, my gosh, I mean, it just looks like guys are just teeing off on him.
It does, and it unfortunately, last night in that inning where he gave up the multiple home runs, I wish I could say that was a surprise to me, but it just kind of feels like that's the way it has gone for him the entire season. We sit here and say, oh, Robbie Ray, he's got better stuff. He should be better than this. I mean, I look at his game log this season. Only twice this season has his ERA been under 4 heading into a start. Opening day, and then on April 24th, his ERA was 3.91.
Jeez.
So he's been up around 4 for basically right, the entire season. And that's not who the Mariners signed. But also, I see a lot of people be like, oh, the Mariners did not fork over $115 million to Robbie Ray for this kind of performance.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily think that's how people should be looking at it. I think they should be looking at it like, oh, the Mariners signed the former American League Cy Young winner, and he's not living up to what his past performance was. Forget about his contract. Let's look at his past performance and what the kind of pitcher that he has been throughout his career. It is not this guy. Who cares what he's getting paid? I just want him to be the kind of pitcher that they brought him over here to be.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. And look, you pay that money and you automatically think ace, okay? There's no one on this team that is getting paid that money and he is the ace. And quite frankly, that's what you're hoping that he could be for the next couple years. But the reality is that this is a 2-3, you know, level starting pitcher, and you're just hoping that he can be that guy. The problem is for the team right now is that you're having to overcome Robbie Ray's starts, that he is becoming a liability for the team, not a, you know, cog in the wheel, a stabilizer, or, you know, better yet, somebody who is dominating that you can lean on. You can't lean on Robbie Ray right now. You can't depend on him. You're not even sure you're going to get a solid outing out of him at the current moment. And that's the problem, because it puts so much more pressure on the rest of your rotation to step up and perform. Thank goodness Logan Gilbert's having the year he's having, right?
Thank goodness George Kirby has been as advertised since being called up from
Double-A. Yes, but it puts more pressure on a rookie like George Kirby to show up every single night that it's his turn to hit the rubber and to be that consistent performer. That's a tough thing to ask a rookie to do through the remainder of this season, right? But, you know, to your point, so far he's been able to do that, and Flexen and Marco. So, you hope that things can stabilize a little bit for Robbie Ray, because over the last couple starts, man, it has been head-scratching to watch somebody who is so talented, who works as hard as he does, to struggle so much and put this team in bad positions.
You want to know how I know this is starting to wear on Robbie Ray?
How's that?
He's shaved his facial hair. He is now wearing just a mustache. That is a telltale sign.
It's a
of
good
somebody,
mustache.
Yeah, it is a good mustache, but that is a telltale sign of somebody who has exhausted all options. They have changed their entire morning routine. They don't eat yogurt. Instead, they eat toast. They don't brush their teeth before taking a shower. They do it after. It's like, what else can I do to change the juju, to change the mojo around me?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to shave my beard off and leave just a mustache. You know when things are going to get super critical with Robbie Ray?
What's that?
He starts wearing baggy pants.
Oh, no.
That's when
things
will reach code red with Robbie Ray, is if we don't see his hamstrings, okay?
if we don't see the posterior chain tightly, we're gonna be in real trouble.
That's
at that
when
point,
things are really
you
bad.
Need to like have a secret, hey, Robbie Ray is going to the IL to take some time off. Like, you can't let Robbie Ray come out there with baggy pants. Then it's over. That can't happen, Curtis. So look, Robbie Ray to me is somebody that I appreciate how much of a battler he is. The 253 sends in a text. At least he's getting innings. It's the least he can do in this situation, given the performances and the amount of runs that he is giving up. But to your point, 253, it's one of the reasons why I look at Robbie Ray and I'm not looking at him saying, gosh, this guy is so incredibly frustrating, like it was with someone like Eric Bedard or anybody in the past, that you question their want to.
Well,
you question.
Yeah. Robbie Ray has been gutting out innings. Eric Bedard was just like, you know what? I'm good.
Right.
I don't need to go back out.
And that's because Robbie Ray's a team guy. He wants to be good for this team. He wants to gut it out. And that's why you root for him and you want to see him turn it around. And obviously it has a tremendous amount of, a tremendous amount of weight as to how good the season becomes. But Robbie Ray, real thankful for last night's ninth inning. That is for sure. It's the Jake and Stacey Show. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Seahawks minicamp starts today. Will Seahawk veteran stars participate? We'll tell you next.
Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Oh, do I have to lead?
I mean,
am I the lead now?
Your name's top billing on the show.
That's right. That's right. Just so used to Stacey taking the reins here that I'm just chilling. I'm just listening to music, vibing along. we talked about, look, we're going to unveil here the top Seahawks storylines heading into minicamp. And you know, minicamp starts today. And the first storyline that we want to touch on is, what is the status of the veteran stars? So you have a lot of veteran stars that have not been at OTAs for a sizable chunk of them. DK Metcalf originally showed up, and then he, you know, was not there. Then you had Quandre Diggs, who has, you know, been in and out of OTAs. And Jamal Adams, I do not believe, has shown up at all to OTAs,
yes,
except for now that mandatory minicamp is here. This is the first time that you're seeing a lot of the veteran players here for the Seahawks.
And we know Jamal is in the building because they were tweeting out promo photos of him yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And those only get taken once you report. You can't do those remotely.
Are you saying, are
setting
you
setting up all these green screens in his living room with all the lights and smoke machines?
Are you implying that Jamal Adams only showed up to do the promos? Is that
I'm
what you're saying here?
That's the only reason why he showed up, but I think that was a big reason why he showed up.
No, come on. Jamal Adams does love the camera, though.
We all like picture
and
Stacey would only show up for picture.
Well,
day
that
if
is
she were a
that's
pro
true.
Athlete.
That is very true. But you know, my question to you, Curtis, is, you know, out of a couple names that I'm going to give you, Jamal Adams, Quandre Diggs, DK Metcalf, Chris Carson, these are some of the bigger stars, bigger, you know, contributors to the team in recent years. Who are you most anxious to learn about?
I think most anxious is Chris Carson, because that will tell us a lot about how the Seahawks plan to operate at running back this season. If he is healthy or at least on the road to being healthy and being a contributor in 2022, that will ease the workload of Rashad Penny, who has never been a feature back in the NFL save for the final, what, six, seven games of last year. I mean, Penny has played in, even with the stretch of the season that he had to end last season, he's only appeared in about half the games he's been eligible to play in the NFL. Ken Walker is a rookie, so you still don't quite know what kind of performance you're going to get out of him. If Carson is able to play this season, that is going to be a huge lift to that running back room. Now, I'm not banking on it. I'm hoping that he will play. Mm-hmm. Fingers crossed he'll be healthy enough to do so. But that is the player that I am most anxious to hear about to see if progress is being made, if there's any sort of chance that he could be on the field in 2022.
You know, it's really a bummer for me because I hear your answer and you're 100% right in terms of how big of a boost it would be and how great it would be. I'm so skeptical that with that significant of an injury in the area that it's in his neck.
And that's fair because there is a long history here in Seattle of players whose careers have ended because of neck injuries, especially recently.
Yes.
Cam Chancellor, Cliff Avril.
And the fact that Chris Carson, this isn't a scat back. This isn't somebody that plays in open space. 100%. He is downhill. He plays with power. He, you know, lowers his pads. He likes to deliver the punishment. And that's when Chris Carson is at his best. And you take that element of his game away, or Chris Carson starts to become a little hesitant to, you know, play in that manner. Is he the same guy? And that to me is what worries me about Chris Carson. It's such a bummer because he truly is one of my favorite running backs in the NFL. In the entire NFL, he is one of my favorite running backs. And I think that he did not get the credit that he deserved, as particularly in those back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons that he had. Yeah, he's a special player, and it just stinks to watch him, you know, have to try to overcome these injuries. But I agree. I am anxious to learn about him, and if he can find a way to contribute along with Rashad Penny and Ken Walker, that would be a big lift to that group.
Now, on this list here, we have DK Metcalf listed.
Mm-hmm.
As we know with the Seahawks, they will not negotiate with you if you're not present. What would it tell you if DK is not there for minicamp? Which we have not gotten any indication that he'll skip out on minicamp. It
yeah.
seems as though things are very harmonious between the two sides based off of what we've seen sort of in the press over the last couple months, basically since the end of the draft.
Yeah. Well, I would be very surprised. I would be very surprised if DK Metcalf was not there for mandatory minicamp. Now, you scour, you know, Seahawks, you know, social media, and you look for the promos and everything else that they're putting out there, and I didn't see anything of DK Metcalf. So I'm not trying to read into it too much, but I am hopeful that he is there. And in the past, you've had guys that, with the Seahawks, even when they're in negotiations, that they have held in, not held out, right? That they have been in camp, they have been in the building, they have participated in meetings, all of that, but they just have not practiced. And I anticipate that is going to be the case with DK Metcalf, and he's injured. DK, Quandre Diggs, Jamal Adams, I don't know what his health status is right now. It's kind of been a mystery, but that is, you know, supposedly the main reason why he has been away, has been through, you know, wanting to make sure his rehab goes well this offseason. But DK Metcalf, I think one of the things that is a bummer in terms of these guys not participating, DK Metcalf, Quandre Diggs, Jamal Adams, is that all three of these individuals are dealing with some sort of injury, but you're going through a new transition, whether it's a new quarterback for your offense or it's an entirely new defense with a, you know, change in your defensive responsibilities and pass coverage in particular. And it would be great to have your two starting safeties out there communicating, working with your guys and developing that chemistry. And so right now, I think that that is what I'm most concerned about at the current moment. It's not to say that all is lost and you can't make up time in training camp, but this time is valuable. And the fact that they're not being able to put it all together, it does concern me.
And not just your two starting safeties in Diggs and Adams, but I would say maybe your two most important players on your defense.
Yeah.
In terms of what they do to the entire unit on that side of the ball. And we've heard it time and time again from Pete Carroll. He mentioned it shortly after the season ended, after week 18, saying, you know, hey, I wish we would have had more participation in OTAs last year. I think that would have really helped us get familiar on the offensive side of the ball, on the defensive side of the ball. And I think there was – I don't necessarily know if the percentage was the same as it was a year ago in terms of participation in OTAs, but it did feel like there were more guys in attendance this year than in years past, and hopefully that bleeds over into minicamp and they're able to continue this forward momentum.
Yes. It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. The Seahawks QB battle between Geno Smith and Drew Lock is ongoing. Coming up next, we're going to tell you what it is going to take to win the job.